Welcome to the Packet Pushers podcast, a place where we connect point A to point B via point C, D, E, and F. And from our microphones to your data centers, we're adding even more SDN flow management control with visible consoles, control platforms, custom silicon, the whole nine yards of the software-defined networking resolution to your hot aisles in the data center. I'm Greg Farrow. You might know me as Ethereal Mind on Twitter and on my blog at Ethereal Mind, and our show should probably come with a hot air indicator, Mr. Banks.
Yeah, I think that it should. Certainly there's lots of hot air floating around out of our mouths and into our microphones. There is no doubt about that. I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and you might know me from there or from my blog at ethancbanks.com. And Mr. Farrow, it is midsummer here in New Hampshire, and things are lovely today. I'm delighted to provide that weather report to you because you care. I know you do. It's important to you.
I'm very pleased to hear that you are getting some lovely weather that doesn't involve snow.
Because every time I'll be glad when the snow comes back, if I'm honest.
I, on the other hand, am looking out the window here across the Cotswold Hills, which are all green, lush, and cow-filled. And dreaming of being on a bar shortly to get a pint in the sunshine this afternoon.
I can't look on any of those hills, and I'm not available to go to the bar with you. It makes me very sad.
We should work on that. But today we do have some new friends. We have a sponsored show with Avaya. Avaya is, of course, a repeat sponsor of the Packet Pushers, and we very much appreciate their support and hope that you do too. Today we've got a discussion on software-defined networking and how the Avaya underlay network works in a software-defined networking infrastructure. But first, let's introduce Randy. Randy, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. I'm Randy Cross. I am the Senior Director of Product Line Management for what we call our Fabric and Infrastructure portfolio. So as I tell them internally, I basically own everything that's fun.
You own fun infrastructure.
Voice apps or unified access or anything else that would bore me after about 30 minutes.
And you seem to be a flag-waving Texan, if I might observe so boldly.
You know, I am. And while Greg has his hills filled with cows there, I'm sitting in my home office for a change, looking out my front window at about two dozen turkeys.
Turkeys. Good day. I have seen turkeys in my front yard, but that is not what I think of when I think of Texas. Now, I got to tell you, when I think of Texas, I think of Interstate 10 going across the southern third of the state where there's like nothing, and you can go search on the radio and it just circles around because there's no radio stations out there and it's kind of bleak. It's where in Texas are you?
So I-10, man, that's the highway to hell down there. Yeah, I am up outside of Fort Worth, so I have a nice little patch of trees and hills and country out here.
Oh, good deal.
Software-defined networking has really started to gather momentum. We've seen a number of software-defined networking companies shipping real products. Over the last two or three years, we've talked extensively about SDN and how you can use it. And this year, particularly since, February, January, Ethan? We've seen companies ship real products.
A lot of products, a lot of big announcements have come out. And yeah, exactly right. Starting late last year with VMware and then Cisco with their announcements and Big Switch Networks coming up and several other announcements as well. Right, shipping product, doing real software-defined networking in the data center.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think I'm beginning to believe now is that SDN is not just something that we talk about as something interesting or to get excited about tomorrow. It's actually here today. And we've got Randy here to talk to us about what his customers are asking him about SDN. So, Randy, tell us from your point of view at Avaya, what customers are asking you about software-defined networking and how you fit into that.
Absolutely. You know, the observations are interesting. You guys are definitely correct. Yeah, in the past several months or more, we've seen some real product ship. We've seen some things happen with SDN. As I go across the customer spectrum, I can almost break it up into kind of three pieces. Right? I go into the provider customers who are looking at this stuff, who are very concerned about orchestration, very concerned about what their customers are going to do and want. I can break it up into the very large enterprise. So you get into folks like financials and the general Fortune 100, and they all have neat little labs tucked away, and they're doing lots of interesting things as they start to play around with their future and what they may want to do for their business. And then I have kind of the general enterprise down to the commercial or mid markets. And those guys are still kind of on the fence of, you know, what's SDN going to do for them and what's it going to shake out to, because we still tend to refer to SDN as this thing, like a concrete product or offering. Whereas the truth is there are really many different forms of SDN, and what we're going to be able to do with them in the market, what customers will do with them, will be many different. We've only really realized a couple thus far.
Are people past the point, as you're talking to them, Randy, of, you know, what is SDN? I mean, are people actually grasping what software-defined networking is all about, and it's more, yeah, but where's my use case?
No, as a matter of fact, they're not. I mean, people still, you know, if I go back 2 years, we'll call it two so I don't have to really think about time. People said SDN and OpenFlow, and they meant it interchangeably. And now, when people talk about SDN, more often than not, what customers are talking about to me is VMware's NSX, right? And it's because, at least in NSX, they see a real use case, and they see a real value to them. You know, changing operations, saving money, right? They can see, and it's something that someone has defined what it is, how it works, and what it has to offer. And honestly, you know, from a customer perspective that I've found, they see it as a bit of a non-committal way to do SDN. You know, their boss is beating them up to get into SDN, go do something, and don't need to make any changes whatsoever to their existing infrastructure. They only have to kind of add the NSX component, and suddenly they can tell their boss they're doing SDN, and they can point to metrics on how it's improved the business.
Randy, that's really interesting. Like, you're one of the first people to highlight on the show that VMware NSX is getting strong acceptance from the enterprise. So you're saying that a lot of people are actually saying, I want to do NSX, but I still need a hardware solution. That's how the NSX product comes to market?
Yeah. So when I go talk to customers and they're actually, you know, looking at what SDN can offer, the first thing that comes to mind to them is kind of this concept of VM mobility and how they're moving applications and things around their data centers. And it's a pain point for them. It's a problem. And so they look to NSX as a way to solve that, as a way to move forward. And like I said, it's really kind of an easy step for them because they're already VMware shops. You know, like I said, there's no change to the infrastructure that's in place. They can simply upgrade and kind of move forward with some real benefit.
But the advantage here about NSX is that they still need a network to run over. Like a lot of things that we talk about with NSX is, you know, they do this in the software, they do this in the software, they do this in the software. But you still have to have a physical network that can carry it around. And that's what we're talking about here with Avaya, is having the right sort of network underlay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Greg, I think it was actually you that had written an article at one point about SDN really had three pieces. There's application, there's controller, and there's infrastructure. We only know one or two applications, it seems, to talk about as SDN applications, just because we haven't explored more. And then people really get wrapped up around that controller aspect of the discussion, and kind of leave out the infrastructure piece. And that is where we're having those conversations, right? I have no problem with my customers having NSX. If they're VMware shops, I think it brings them value. And I think over time, as they figure out more applications, they'll have other forms of SDN. All along the way, they will need the right kind of underlay to really see the value of what they're doing.
Well, there are other forms of overlay networking going on, like Open Daylight, of course, is something that a lot of people are using, and it can be used to control software overlays as well. There's Midacura, there's NetSocket, there's any number of really good SDN companies producing SDN products. It's not just VMware NSX, but all of them still have to have a physical underlay that's there.
Yep, absolutely agree. And you know, the more that we get this stuff out there, the more customers learn about you know, these different options and what they have to offer, I think the better it is, because we'll have a much healthier ecosystem. But to your point, yeah, they all need an underlay. They all need something. And today, whether it's, you know, it's a traditional layer two, layer three network that's the underlay, or we go off and do something like Juniper's Contrail or Nuage with MPLS, you know, people kind of, they look at the stake there and how sexy it is, but they forget that, you know, there's a pan and a fire and whatever else underneath it. And, you know, no one wants to really talk about the fact that, well, while you're doing SDN to simplify operations, to make things better, you're ignoring the fact that, you know, you've kind of given one group a carrot and you've ignored this other group whose job hasn't changed at all. The underlay is still just as complex as it ever was and has all the same challenges that it did before. Only now there's an invisible service running on top of it that they have no idea what it's doing or why or any real access to it.
So you just kind of made an important point there, which is you're talking to some customers who have a complicated IP network already that's out there, and then they want to add more complexity to it, which is a point I've made before. Some people say, oh, with SDN, you know, network engineers go away because their functionality is replaced in some automated way or with algorithms, et cetera. But there's a network that's there that you just added more functionality to. It doesn't obviate the need for someone to do good design and properly create a good network. As you are talking to customers about their, you know, interest in SDN and then what you guys can do for them, is that a concern? I mean, do they recognize we have a complex network and it worries us that we're going to add more complexity to it?
So, you know, it's interesting, depending on who you're talking to there and at what level, if they recognize that or not. It's funny, a lot of times I'll talk to folks and, you know, they'll be talking about how they're simplifying things and making them better. And I'll throw out the piece that, well, but what happens with the network underneath that's already there? Well, we're not touching that. So it's just as complex. You're adding more complexity on top of it. And it tends to kind of be either an aha moment or a defensive moment as they really kind of come to this realization. You know, while there are others that you go in and they'll just kind of admit, yeah, but you know, my network guys, their network guys, I'll just throw a little more on their shoulders and they'll buck up and take it. I'm trying to make life easier for these guys who are changing the bottom line on the application side.
But that's the way our networks have been for the last decade or two, is to some extent we never really knew what was going on in the application layer. We didn't need to know because there was very little. We're like a roadway. We don't really care what carries over the road so long as it doesn't break us. The only time we have a problem with the road is when the applications overload or overweight for the roadway in concept.
Yep, absolutely. Instead of looking at it like application, though, I will tell you from an overlay perspective, I generally look at it like wireless LAN, right? So if I take the overlay perspective of SDN with controller and overlay protocol, it looks a lot like wireless LAN with a wireless controller and CAPWAP tunnels, right?
Yeah.
And if I gave my wireless LAN to an entirely different group and let them play with it, and every time there were problems with users on the wireless LAN, they called me and yelled at me, and I had no visibility into this CAPWAP thing, it would get really tough, right? It becomes that nightmare, and I, having worked in tech myself, I know how this is. It becomes that nightmare call of, you know, the internet is slow. And looking at each other like, okay, well, what's Al Gore's phone number? Because it's really hard to solve. It's a little different than the application where you're really down at the kind of the raw data level when an application is running over you. And you can make very deterministic, succinct statements about what's happening with that data as it's coming through and what kind of data you're getting to go back to the application people. Whereas when you're looking at a tunnel that has something else inside of it, all you can really say is there's a tunnel there and it's moving, right?
Yeah, depending on what's doing the inspection, but generally speaking, yeah, the in a lot of paradigms, the tunnel is what's getting inspected, not what's inside the tunnel. In fact, some network analysis products are making their differentiator because, hey, we look at what's inside the tunnel and can do analysis on that because very often you're otherwise blind.
Yep.
But there's one other point I want to raise you raised earlier, which I thought was very interesting. You said, you know, you've got lots of enterprises who are big enough to have, you know, labs and to be able to do their own thing. But here in the real world, most people have got these networks that they've got and they need to find a way to bridge to the new one. You know, you've got to get from where you are now to where you're going to be in the future. And you know, I sort of got a hint there about you're sort of saying that if you've got a network, you're not going to go and throw it out and start again. Is that sort of the logic?
Oh, absolutely. Right. I mean, we're getting into a place where data continues to grow, storage requirements continue to grow, compute requirements continue to grow. Right. If I have a network that works with enough bandwidth, I have plenty of things to spend my money on. And by the way, with all those things growing, my budget didn't. So customers really are looking at, you know, how do I cap, if I'm going to make a change, how do I cap my current investment and move to grow my new investment and where I'm trying to be? And over time, I'll slowly phase out the old piece in favor of the new. And, you know, it's a tough dilemma for them because the truth of the matter is, you know, like we said, SDN's evolving. There are lots of applications, lots of things to do. And it's just like building the house, right? So my wife picked gorgeous brick and stone and all these things that made the fascia great. But if we didn't have the right foundation, you know, if I hadn't had them engineer it with piers and everything else on the soil we have, then that beautiful fascia would be cracked and falling off, and I'd be trying to figure out how to unload this place on somebody.
Poor somebody. So you're making the statement here that there's a clear path about how you get from here to the sort of SDN that you're talking about. Tell us about that path. What does that look like?
Now you really are getting into kind of that underlay discussion. And today, if I look at the enterprise, and we'll keep it to your point there, kind of the rest of the world, right? Not these guys with these luxurious test labs and resources or the provider world. But for the rest of us, we've probably got a couple things. We've got some campuses, some data centers that are based on traditional L2, L3 network. And we've got some leased circuits, right? Because most enterprises that are kind of outside that top Fortune class aren't building their own WANs, right? It's just a lot of unnecessary work and expense. So now you have to kind of take it to the next level. And this is really where those conversations about the underlay resonate with our customers is, you know, if you're going to have a goal of simplification, of agility, of, you know, really moving forward with SDN-based applications and an SDN control layer, then you need an infrastructure layer that complements that. And the whole reason that we came about with the SDN layer is because the existing infrastructure layer didn't do that in the first place. So that's where underlays come into play. And of course, we have Fabric Connect here at Avaya, which is based on shortest path bridging. And shortest path bridging, really, when you look at it, is a perfect complement to those higher layers. The whole concept around which it was designed are in agility, right? Time to service, simplicity, edge-only type provisioning. As we're walking into these customers, you know, the last thing anybody wants to hear is, oh, yeah, that's great, but you have to rip and replace everything. Well, that's the last thing everybody but your vendor wants to hear, right? It's always...
Right.
You know, think about someone other than myself. And the customer doesn't want to hear that. Because what the customer wants to hear is, okay, I'm putting in this SDN application, and it's going to be between points A and B. And I want to make some adjustments to my infrastructure there. Or I'm building a new data center or whatever it may be. And so that's where we talk about really starting with the proper new foundation. So let's start with SPB and that underneath that service, where we can provide you the agility, we can provide you the simplicity, right? We can provide you an underlay that complements the application you're trying to create. And then we'll simply have a border point where we move into the traditional network. And as this thing grows, what you'll end up with is you'll probably end up with multiple islands of the underlay, whether it's at data centers or maybe you're doing some SDN application in the campus, wherever. And once you'll have these islands, simple to interconnect them over the existing infrastructure. And then, you know, once you evolve fully, you'll kind of have just assumed that entire existing infrastructure and moved in the underlay completely, right? Now, operationally, did you get rid of all the complexity you had in the first place? No. But there's always that trade-off between I have a path to get where I'm going to go within my budget and my means, or, you know, I'm going to go let the bank sit on my head, do everything now.
Now, shortest path bridging, we've talked about it on the show off and on for years now at this point, but you know, the most people are going to think of that and go, oh, it is a layer 2 multipathing solution that replaces my spanning tree. But Avaya SPB does a lot more than that. There's different ways that you can configure it. I've been spending some time with some Avaya switches in my lab trying to get my brain wrapped around just what how Fabric Connect works and what SPB from the Avaya viewpoint is all about. And, you know, I can just follow up with Randy with one of the things you were saying. You made a point about, ease of, configuration and kind of rolling this thing out, pushing your more complex provisioning out to the edge and just letting the core be a simple configuration. And that is all what I'm finding to be true. And I'm only through this series of labs that get me up to building out, layer 2 SVNs. And I'm finding as I look ahead, you can build like a layer 3 virtualized environment with VRFs if you want without having to rely on MPLS. So for folks that are thinking of SPB simply as layer 2 multipathing, in the Avaya world, it's got a lot more capability than that. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if it were only layer 2, then I might as well go on the unified access products because it's about that interesting. We have the capability to do layer 2 VSNs, as you mentioned, or virtual service network. We have layer 3 VSNs, which are basically the same thing as an IP VPN in the MPLS world. We have multicast capability. We have the ability to, to bleed routes between these things, whether you want to bleed them between two VSN services or you want to take routes in from the global routing table, the GRT. But on top of that, Ethan, it turns out I'm not really that smart. So the goal in R&D is to make things easy enough that I can figure them out and still look like I know how to build network. They've been working on a new functionality called Fabric Attach, and we showed it off. I think it was after the last time we talked to you guys at Network Field Day. It was at our Avaya Technology Forum, which is our users group. And it's really just the ability to do automated attach from edge devices. So if I take one of our older model switches that didn't have a late enough chipset to be able to do Mac and Mac for without doing multiple loopbacks through the chip and eating up bandwidth, or if I take a video surveillance camera from one of our partners, or we're even working on some stuff with some medical devices, medical endpoints, and I plug it in, I have the ability to go in there and I can either do a completely automated attach where I recognize that device and what it is, and then set up the VSN for it automatically inside a predefined proper service. Or I could go in, on the switch side at least, I could go into one of the older switches and I could type the same, VLAN to ISID mapping command that you type today in that switch and have it push that config up to the actual SPB network. So, we're continuing to work to simplify that, to push that configuration as far out to the edge as possible, and to really allow the elements we want to be in services to, you know, be able to be assigned properly to those services that they should be in, whether it's for proper TE, whether it's for proper QoS, whatever it may be.
One of the concepts that you just elaborated on there a little bit was automation and how you can automate different services depending on just how you're deploying your Avaya fabric. And automation, it comes up a lot in SDN. In fact, for, like you were saying earlier, that to some people, they're still equating SDN and OpenFlow as the same thing. Some people think automation is SDN. That's what it's all about. I mean, it is an SDN all by itself, but it's awfully important. In your world, from your viewpoint, how does automation really fit into the larger SDN world?
So that's a great point. There are a lot of these unfair equalities that are out there, and you're right. A lot of people will say, oh, automation, SDN, it's one and the same, but they're not. To your point, automation is a great tool that can improve your SDN solution. And so generally, I look at automation from obviously the infrastructure, the underlay standpoint. If I have a more intelligent higher layer with my controller, with my application that I'm doing different things, then having the ability to create automation underneath is simply a perfect complement that completes my solution. And we talk about it in different, you know, terms and forms. Sometimes I talk about it from the perspective of things like VM mobility. A lot of times I talk about it more from the perspective of, you know, nodal compute and nodal storage as people are doing those types of deployments. Being able to automate the infrastructure to recognize that these elements have been added to be able to orchestrate between them is a huge benefit. Because this is where, you know, again, you're taking that burden off of the networking team and you're giving them kind of a similar tool set and benefit as you're giving the teams at those higher layers with the controllers and the application.
Randy, you started talking there about automation and what it is and the value of what it brings to networking. Now, this is a thing that we've been hitting on here for a long time. I've been talking about, you know, wearing your fingers down to bloody little stumps banging on the keyboard and the unreliability of the CLI and topics like that. Is that the sort of automation that is so fundamental to achieving SDN? And how does Avaya deal with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can go look at stats or you can just go talk to anyone I've worked for. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you when a person touches the keyboard, all right, bad things happen. So, you know, even if you have 100 good things before it, that one bad thing could make the difference between, you know, a good quarter and a bad quarter or whatever it may be. So having people away from the keyboard, having people focused on other things is really key. And part of it is also just the concept of making sure we have open standards in all this, right? The automation aspect is great, but if I go to a customer and I tell them, hey, the only way you can automate is to have this secret sauce for me, and back to our point earlier of now you have to be all me, you have no other choices, that's really tough. And so I mentioned a minute ago there the whole fabric attach concept. And while it's something we've worked on internally, we've done it with a group of partners. Mm. And so I believe it was last week. Yeah, this week is IETF. Last week was IEEE down in San Diego. Last week at IEEE, the concept was put out there. And so now the discussion is going on of all the joy that I'm fortunate enough not to deal with, of, you know, which standard they'll put it into, how all the logistics, but we'll move forward with that.
Yeah, and it's important, right? Standards, there's real value in standards around automation because Avaya is going to provide the hardware. You want other people to have software that can consume your hardware as a target point. Mm-hmm. And those standards are what enables developers to know that it's going to work with yours. Now, I believe that the market's changing into the future. We're going to see a lot more networking than we've ever seen before. And the way that we're talking to networking equipment is not going to be proprietary CLIs that are unique, handcrafted for every silicon chip that they use. They're going to be far more standardized. The APIs that automation uses are going to be consistently the same across all the base. Is that a fair way of how Avaya looks at things?
Yeah, absolutely. And you see it with, you know, I tell you, we're trying to drive standards. You see it with really NetConf being driven across all the IEEE standards, being accepted in ODL. It's part of OpenFlow already. And just to expand on the statement you made, right? You said something interesting. So, you know, Avaya is selling hardware. Well, the truth is, you know, we don't see ourselves as a hardware company. We're a software company. And if you ask me where this thing is headed in probably the next 3 to 5 years, it's less about I'm going to buy my hardware from this guy or that guy. And it's more about, you know, these consumption models of software from traditional networking vendors. And it may or may not come with hardware, right? We may, at some point, we may end up in this white box model that you see in the compute world or others, right? And so having this kind of interchangeability in these standards that keep things aligned becomes really key. Again, you're putting in place today the foundation for what you're building over the next several years, and you don't want to have to rip it out and replace it.
Yeah, I want to give you an endorsement for that. Like, one of the things is I'm still working with customers who've got products from Avaya that are, you know, 4, 5, 6, maybe even older, I think, sometimes. And they're still getting software updates for those and still getting support for those products. You don't actually have to keep throwing things away to buy new ones. Avaya's been very good at that. And the Avaya products and the software that I've worked on has worked really well. It does interoperate with other people's spanning tree. It does interoperate with other people's OSPF. I haven't had a whole bunch of problems trying to, even when I'm trying to do something a little bit tricky-dicky, you know, when you try and do a double head overhead inverted OSPF redistribution between the magic flip, it still works, right? It still works the way you think it should work. It doesn't do trick stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you could just give me those the names of those customers after the podcast, it's our fiscal... So
they'd be pleased to talk to you, I'm sure. So automation is a big thing for what you see as SDN, and you're bringing Avaya into that space where the APIs, once they get standardized, they're going to be in the products. So tell me, let's have a final discussion around what does the Avaya underlay model look like? Explain that model of how you put something together using Avaya products in the network.
So, I mean, obviously from a box perspective, it's the same discussion as any vendor, right? I've got, you know, size X widget, size Y widget that you're going to put in different areas. But the real key comes into that virtual layer. And so we talked about SPB earlier, right? And the beauty of SPB is that it's really a network-wide tool, right? I don't have to say, oh, you put it here in the data center or you put it there in the campus or whatever it may be. And so kind of from the discussion we were having earlier, right? So where I see that, see things happening is, okay, so you're doing, you know, SDN today in the data center where you have a use case where it makes sense. And so having a simple data center architecture where you're two tiers, right? You have a spine layer, which is really just kind of switching things. And then you have a more intelligent top of rack layer, which, by the way, is also somewhat meshed together to take care of West traffic, right? You may have L2 services there. You may have L3 services there. You may have multicast services there. And then, you know, what we really see today is now the next piece of SPB, well, and so before I go there, it's actually not one data center. Let's be clear. It's multiple data centers. And I'm doing that data center interconnect with SPB as well. And usually what I have there is, you know, the DCI link is some MPLS circuit from whatever the local provider is. And I'm just running SPB across that. And those two data centers, or three or four, however many it is, look like a single data center.
You just said a mouthful there, though, that I think is important to zoom in on, which is, I've just run an SPB across my MPLS-provided circuit. Well, yeah, how are you doing that, actually?
There are a couple ways. One is, as long as it's an L2 circuit, just an Ethernet wire to me. So okay. I can just run SPB across it, and it's no big deal. If it is an L3 circuit, so let's say that for some reason your provider says, the only thing I want to provide is IPVPN because it's more complex and I can charge you more money. At that point, yeah, the SPB, all the signaling for SPB is going to cut there at the edge and you would need to connect it. And so what we're doing today, and this is evolving over the next year or so, but you know, I can only tell you so much publicly on air.
Yeah, that's right.
What we're doing today is we have a special sleeve that the optic pops into, so it just goes right into the SFP slot that is tunneling SPB into IP, and then it's passing traditional IP over that IPVPN link, and at the other side it pops back out SPB.
Right, so, okay, yeah. So yeah. Ethernet over SPB over IP over provider infrastructure. Woo!
Yeah, well, come on. I was a long time MPLS provider guy. So, you know, I told you guys before, I love BGP confederations. That should tell you everything you need to know. I'm insane.
But those sorts of ideas work really well, right? People who are, you know, if you've got a network which does this type of stuff, then you've got everything that you don't want to have to go and buy a special router just to be able to get the functionality that you're looking for. It's pretty useful just to be able to say, you know, put this thing in and then all of a sudden you've got what you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a switch perspective, a configuration perspective, it's the same config. So you don't really see all the complexity. You just kind of configure what you know you need to configure, and it's behind the curtain.
That solution that you're describing is exactly what I personally am interested in from my my day job network that I deal with. I would like to be able to push SPB all the way out across my carrier-provided MPLS cloud, which happens to be an L3 VPN configuration, but still have SPB services all the way out at the edge. Well, with what you just described, someday I'm going to be able to do that, and that's part of what I'm testing in my lab right now. So it is, I really wanted to bring that out for people that are considering Avaya as their underlay, inter-data center connectivity, whatever it is, because some people are going to run into that roadblock. There is a solution coming for that.
Yeah, absolutely, and appreciate that, because it is one we try to get out there and make sure people know about. Definitely important.
So Randy, the you're making the point here that the Avaya underlay can go anywhere and, you know, can go across even geographical boundaries, you know, and these kind of things, which gives you, you know, an underlay model that you can push to really all corners of your network, and that's a solid foundation for your software-defined networking. Are there any, you know, big points that we should make beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that captures it, right? So I was talking about the data center a bit there, but to your point, it doesn't have limitations. And so while the problems we see today and we're trying to deal with today are in the data center, you know, the things we'll figure out tomorrow and be able to add benefit on will be in the campus or the branch or wherever. And just like you did the DCI connection between your data centers, you know, you'll be able to connect your campuses to your data centers to one another, your branches the same, by simply extending SPB out to those. And you will have the most important part, one single underlay protocol for the entire network. And that's always been the kicker, right? Because, you know, even when I was doing provider networks and we were doing data center extension and things like that, it was PBB into VPLS into pseudo wires, right? And the more things you kick in, you know, the more you're going to pay guys like us to come in and consult or build it for you. And there are better things to spend your budget on.
Yeah, I know. I definitely recognize the point that, you know, today the big problems seem to be in the data center. And maybe that's just because data center operators are the ones who have these issues most poignantly. But certainly enterprises and the folks down the line have that WAN mindset very, very often, where they really want a solution that covers not just their data centers, but that they can extend globally you know, and then manage it in a uniform manner. I was going to say manage it centrally, but that's not necessarily the case, but just manage it predictably, you know, operate that network in the same way no matter where that network edge happens to be, whether it's in the data center or whether it's somewhere else globally entirely. So to begin to see vendors like Avaya talking about how that is going to come together and how all the SDN islands, if you will, are going to be joined together, I think is a really big deal. And again, you guys at Avaya are preaching the SPB gospel. It keeps coming forth as a plausible solution to do exactly that in a simpler way than the ways that we've been doing it at a service provider level, MPLS and BGP, and then layering all those services on top of that foundation can give you. But with a lot of complexity and with network engineers having to do a good bit of retraining if they've not been in that space to understand how that all works. I know that's something that the enterprise-oriented guys are struggling with as they look to do network virtualization, look at that service provider model and go, man, I don't know about that. SPB steps in and it just is easier to get your brain around what's going on and how those services work, and being able to extend them to the furthest corners of your network is a real promising future for what this underlay would look like.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. You want a job?
Yeah.
He's got one. He does work with SPB. Like, you know, both of us are trying to do these things in the real world as well as talk about them on the show. And so sometimes we have a unique perspective about how we go about things. Well, I think that we've probably done enough on this. Thanks to Avaya for joining us today and sponsoring the Packet Pushers. We do appreciate the support. And also, it's very interesting to find out how different vendors go about doing approaching the market. If you're in the market for products, ultimately in networking, you have to pick a vendor. You are going to pick a partner and a vendor partner and an integration partner. And it's good to know about all of the different partners that we're doing. And Avaya is one of the few companies that's doing something quite different in their networking around their SPB. And to find out that we've talked today about how their SDN strategy works, particularly around NSX, but also around the other things. So thanks very much for Randy for joining us today. Have you got anything exciting coming up in the week ahead, Randy?
You know, that's a good question. I've been gone for about 5 weeks now between work, travel, and vacation. So whatever's in my email box, I'll find out what it is.
You're one of those people.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have a great week. What about you, Mr. Banks? Are we at home sitting in our chairs of leisure?
I am this week. I am preparing for Interop New York coming up, where I'll be speaking and moderating a panel discussion on will software-defined networking take over traditional certification routes as the next big thing that you should be learning. Getting ready for that. I'm going to be doing a road trip out to my day job in Columbus, Ohio. I'll also be out on the West Coast at Tech Field Day in the middle of September. Oh, and before all that is VMworld. I'm going to be at VMworld as well. And I have a calendar on my blog site, ethancbanks.com, if you're interested in seeing if I'm going to show up where you might be. If you want to meet up for dinner at a conference or something, I'd love to do that. I've met a lot of great people that way.
You dirty stop out. Getting around, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah. I'm off to do 2 days of on-site consulting work with a large university here in the UK and design a new data center network. I'll be looking forward to hearing real-world experiences. But other than that, I'll be sitting here in the Palace of Productivity, waving my fingers to little bloody stumps over articles as I write about networking. Thanks for joining us on the Packet Pushers this week. Don't forget that there is a blog post that accompanies this show, and there are more data in the blog post and links to content from Avaya about where you can find out more about stuff in the show. Don't forget to follow us on iTunes. If you really, really helps us, if you could go to iTunes and leave a positive piece of feedback about the show, because that attracts more people to join us. You too can join us on the Packet Pushers and blog with us. Don't forget to write to us if that's something what you're interested. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.